You're listening to the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi,
featuring attorney, guest, and former felony prosecutor Eric Fardis.
Brian Koberger wants the world to know more about his case. Kind of surprising, considering the gag order and the lack of anything that has come out of the Koberger side of the camp. But now they want the judge to make public their arguments that he should rethink his decision to deny their ask to toss out the charges. It occurred just the other week. It's all under seal. We don't know exactly what the reasoning was behind any of it, but Brian Koberger's attorney and Koberger say you should know why that decision was made. Attorney Eric Fattis is joining us to discuss. I guess that's my question. Is there anything that we should know? Is there anything behind that? Or is this just kind of some more legal maneuvering and, you know, look, smoke, there's something behind door number two, and then it's a Geo Metro or something like that. What do you think is going on here with this this new motion of asking the judge to unseal the reason behind his decision?
Well, I hope Koberger's packing more than a Daewoo in that motion to dismiss, something a little more impressive. But regardless of the merits of that motion to dismiss, I personally think that the public does have a right to know. Look, this is a quadruple murder. This is something that affects the public interest. And so they should be able to learn what both sides feel about the case. We've heard so much about the prosecution side and about the alleged evidence against Koberger. I think it's only fair that his team gets to say, well, let's pump the brakes here, hear what we have to say, and then the public can kind of make their own more informed decision.
How much does it matter what the public knows on this, I guess, is the question. Ultimately, at the end of the day, the jury is going to be decided out of folks in Moscow, Idaho. That's where the trial is still set to be taking place at. So, you know, you do have influence out there with what is being said before a jury pool is actually selected. Is this all part of that? Is obviously the rest of the nation, the rest of the world really gets to see and hear whatever comes out. But is this all really much more micro-focused on the citizens of Moscow, Idaho, and hear and see what we have to say as this continues on, because we think you're only hearing, you know, one side of the story.
You know, us in the law world like this sort of warm, fuzzy idea that a jury is going to decide this case and they're not going to be influenced by any external factor at all or news or information or anything like that. And as I practice more and more, I'm just not convinced that's actually what's happening. You know, these are people. There's been tremendous coverage of this case already. There's going to be tremendous pressure within that community. And does this move by the defense sort of try to balance that social narrative to perhaps give folks a sense of like, hey, there's, you know, we need to listen to both sides here. I think that's kind of what the defense is doing, trying to sort of manage the optics of it and equalize that social pressure that's going to be coming once this trial takes place.
How much influence does this have on a jury as an attorney when you see things like this taking place? This, you know, almost, you know, marketing to the audience, if you will, of here's the story and here's our narrative and here's that narrative. Obviously, yeah, we have that idea in our minds of, oh, it's an impartial jury. At the end of the day, people are going to hear about these sort of things, and you're going to ask them to be impartial. Being on a jury doesn't necessarily mean that you have zero knowledge of what happened or that you know this even exists, especially on something high profile. Most people will probably have some idea that it exists. But how much weight does that hold nowadays as maybe it didn't 30, 40 years ago without social media, without the way that we consume this information in terms of swaying a jury one direction or another? Is it just as important? Is it more important what goes on outside of the courtroom prior to a trial than what even takes place within the walls of the courtroom?
I think it's critically important. And don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that anyone should be trying to influence future potential jurors or anything like that. What I'm saying is that in these modern times with social media, with ubiquitous access of information about current events, it's very important to have both sides out there. We look at the George Floyd incident. And, you know, initially, the officers weren't even going to be charged. And then these videos started coming out and the public started getting involved. And they said, hey, wait a sec. We've got to do something different than what the state thinks we should do in this case. And that changed the entire trajectory of that incident. And so I think it's so important to sort of manage the public sentiment and the public narrative about what's going on in your case, especially if it's a massive case like this.
Do you think they have anything to get out there? I mean, obviously, we haven't heard any sort of groundbreaking leaks or anything out of the Koberger camp. We've heard leaks out of the other camp that really point to guilt, but there's been nothing. And if you're trying to sway public opinion one way or another. Wouldn't you want to get something out there of some sort if you have it? Because right now, again, it just kind of feels like a game show. What's behind door number two? It's right there. We don't know. Show us. What's behind door number two if you got something?
Yeah, you know, one thing that I say often, having sort of behind the scenes knowledge in the criminal side, is that if a defendant didn't do it, then likely they have an alibi. Likely they were somewhere else. They were Brent Koberg, if he didn't do it, he was not at that, you know, college house on the night in question. And so we'd expect an alibi. We'd expect, you know, some electronic or digital information tying Koberger to the place where he actually was while he was not committing these murders. We haven't heard anything like that. And so it's starting to be less and less convincing to me that this wasn't him. Mm-hmm. You know, is there some kind of mental health defense? Is there some kind of, I don't know. It's just, they've just been so tied to the vest about it that we're not sure.
Well, and the alibi argument, I mean, you're exactly right. If he wasn't there, okay, well, what's the arguments to show that you weren't? Because all the evidence that does exist does show that you were there in that area at that point in time. Factual, digital, GPS evidence that all points to that. And if you're a young person, there's got to be a gazillion ways to kind of point at where one person is at almost any given point in time. And if all that still points that you were over there, that's got to be a really hard case to try and defend.
Oh, it does. Now, one thing to keep in mind is the jury will not hear about the absence of the alibi or what an alibi is or anything like that. But, you know, from an onlooker's perspective and from the world that's following this case, we're kind of saying, gosh, dude, if you weren't there, tell us where you were. Tell us who you were with. Give us some, you know, were you with a witness who can swear under oath that she was with you? Or is there some, you know, digital cell phone data that was used at a different location at the time the murders took place? We've got none of this so far. And so it's really starting to feel like the walls are closing in on Brian Koberg.
Would they be withholding that because of the gag order that's in place here? You know, or is it more powerful to drop that bomb in court? Or would it be more powerful to drop it way out ahead of time to steer more narrative rather than just at the very last minute? By the way, here's all the exonerating evidence. Isn't it more effective to kind of get that out there early?
It is, unless everyone's already convinced that your client is guilty. You know, in a normal case, I would say, yes, it's advantageous for the defense to withhold its investigation information that it has and sort of drop it at the last second. It's not quite an ambush, but it's sort of a, you know, hey, throws the prosecution on their heels.
Yeah.
Here, the issue is that the entire world, it seems, or at least a lot of people are convinced that this dude is guilty. And so if you wait too long, people have already made up their minds, including jurors on that juror, in the juror box, who say they have.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to consider what they may have to say, if anything, or if there is just like a Geo Metro behind door number two. That would suck.
Want to listen ad-free? Want advanced access to all of our interviews before anyone else?
Become a True Crime Today Premium Plus subscriber on Apple Podcasts.
You get every episode commercial-free,
so you can binge on true crime
until you can binge no more.
Search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts now, or go to our podcast page and sign up now.
More of the Hidden Killers podcast next.